10 years ago, the BBC put on a series of programmes called The Monastery. I don't know if any of you watched it. They brought together a group of five men from different backgrounds, there in the bottom left-hand corner of the picture, at Worth Abbey, a Benedictine Catholic monastery in Sussex. And for 40 days and 40 nights, they were asked to live the lives of the Benedictine community. And it was hard. One of the most difficult things they found was to let go of their mobile phones. Because not only was that their connection with the outside world, but they were just so used to being on the go the whole time, whereas the background of Benedictine life is silence. Everything has a time and a place, but basically that's the background you're living with. Not noise, not interaction, but silence. It had a significant impact on their lives, particularly one man, Tony, who's there at the back with the fair hair, who, after this experience, gave up his job. He was involved in something to do with adult videos or something like that, and he gave up his job and had a complete change of lifestyle following a really powerful encounter with God during this time. This series had a viewing audience of 3 million. 3 million people. And in the months that followed the first program, the Abbey website received 40,000 visits, 40,000 hits. And hundreds of people subsequently signed up for retreats. And the monks, particularly Christopher Jamieson, who's there, were invited to address business people and others, offering training in contemplation. People are often surprised just how in touch people who devote their lives to quietness and contemplation are with real life. Times when I've been in prayer, times of prayer at monasteries and places like that, I've been really struck just how informed they are about what's going on in the world and how deep their understanding is of human nature, because they've actually taken the time to understand themselves and therefore are aware of what's going on. And frankly, I've been embarrassed and challenged when I've been in those situations where I've heard people praying about things in the world that I've given very little attention to in my own prayers. And also struck by how often I've been in churches, thankfully not this one, where prayer for others sometimes doesn't even feature in the service. Another experiment took place in 2010. Christopher Jamieson, who was abbot of Worth Abbey at the time, invited another group of five people to take part in what they called The Big Silence, another TV series that had a dramatic impact. The idea was that we can all build silence into our lives, and that can be transforming. It included an 8-day silent retreat at St. Bino's retreat centre in North Wales, which was a bit of a challenge as well. But there was this belief that we can all discover the power of silence in our lives if only we see it as something which is important. Christopher Jamieson said, "When we enter into periods of silence, we start to see things with greater clarity. We come to know ourselves and come in touch with that deepest part of ourselves, that is our soul." And throughout history, and throughout the Bible, the people who've really known God are those prepared to wait on him, to listen, and to be still. Now, I think I need to say at this point that stillness and silence and solitude is not necessarily going to transform you. I believe that encountering God in silence and solitude is what will transform you, but that this is the most important way in which we can encounter God. I say that because I've known people over the years, many times, who've really been into retreats and quiet days and going off to monasteries and all the rest of it, who've remained incredibly lacking in self-awareness and really struggle with interaction with other people as well. So this is not a panacea for all your problems. But I do believe it is an important way. And as Jamieson put it, that we can get in touch with that deepest part of ourselves, the soul, which is the doorway to encountering God, when you think about it. Why do we find it so hard? And what are we missing out on if we ignore the Spirit's call to quietness and trust? I'm going to say two things. Firstly, an encouragement and a challenge. Firstly, that it is possible. And secondly, that it's important. we'll look at a bit more at the Bible, and then I've got three other questions to consider. Why is it so difficult? What is the point? And where do I start? So that's where we're going. But firstly, just to encourage you, that it is possible. Finding space for silence and being alone with God, solitude, is not as incompatible with your personality and your lifestyle as you might think. Many of us are very busy and have huge demands on our time and energy. And if any of you have got small children, I have particular sympathy for you. I know Jill once, years ago, I don't know where we were up to with our kids at the time, but it was when they were very young, and she promised that she would spend 5 minutes in quiet with God as soon as she next had the opportunity to do so. And it was for like 2.5 days, not counting for sleep, when she actually just found a bit of space because of the demands. We did have 3 kids under 3, so that's probably something to do with it. So I realise that there are challenges, but there are small steps we can take, which I'll come back to a bit later on. The other thing is that some people assume that quietness and contemplation is for introverts, who like being on their own and like quietness, as opposed to extroverts who like going to parties and being around people and all the rest of it. Please don't make that mistake. The real danger for people who are extrovert, and that would include me, is that we can live superficially. We can just interact all the time and be busy and bounce off people and say lots of things and interact all the time and live superficially. There is also a big danger that we can burn ourselves out because we're so much in touch with the demands and the expectations of other people that we're constantly missing out on what's going on inside ourselves. And I think part of the reason we find it so difficult is that we refuse to recognize what's going on in our own souls. It's a lot easier sometimes to be on the go all the time and bouncing off people and saying stuff and doing stuff than it is to really say, what's going on deep within me? What is God doing deep within me? And we desperately need to be still and know God. Someone who deliberately took time aside from a busy and indeed adventurous life, a lady called Anne Morrow Lindbergh, an American explorer and writer, wrote this. It is a difficult lesson to learn today, to leave one's friends and family and deliberately practice the art of solitude for an hour or a day or a week. For me, the break is most difficult. And yet once it is done, I find there is a quality to being alone that is incredibly precious. Life rushes back into the void, richer, more vivid, fuller than before. It's possible and it's important. When you think about it, listening is crucial in all our relationships. There are few things more effective in showing somebody that they matter than listening to them. And listening carefully. And if that's true in human interaction, can we really expect to develop our relationship with God if we don't spend time listening? Really listening. My college principal, Brian Hames, said that probably the best definition of prayer he'd come across, unless he said it himself, which he may have done, was paying attention to God. Whatever else we may say about prayer, and obviously we're saying a lot in these weeks, prayer is, at its heart, paying attention to God. We have to ask ourselves, is God not worth the time it takes for us to quieten all the other voices in our minds and shut out all the other demands on us and be silent before him? Is he not important enough? Why do we avoid silence? I wonder sometimes, is it because we're afraid that we'll encounter nothing rather than experiencing, to quote, life richer, more vivid, fuller than before? Are we afraid that when we wait on the Lord, we won't hear anything? Or do we sometimes conversely grab the first thing we hear and dash off thinking that's enough? Let's turn again to the Bible. But before we do that, I'd like you just to be silent again for a few moments. Let's be quiet. when you read the Bible, you'll see that listening is central to God's revelation of himself. God desires intimacy with us. God is a God who wants to speak to us and relate to us. Whether you go back to the story of the Garden of Eden, or you look at Moses and the prophets, or supremely Jesus himself and the work of the Holy Spirit in the New Testament, we'd encounter a God who speaks. Unlike the dumb idols that the prophets railed against because they could not speak, whereas our God can. And I want us to focus on two particular examples. Firstly, Elijah, and secondly, Jesus himself. There is a wonderful story in 1 Kings, just before the passage that I read to you, about where Elijah and the prophets of Baal have an encounter here on Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai, the same place. And basically they have a prayer battle, and Elijah wins very convincingly as God answers his prayer, and the prophets of Baal, all 400 of them, waste their time shouting and screaming and cutting themselves to no avail. The incredible thing is that after that wonderful mountaintop encounter, Queen Jezebel, who's a nasty piece of work, tells Elijah she's going to get him, and he legs it. He actually, I think, has a breakdown. If ever you've really, really been energized by something and worked really hard and had an incredibly intense experience, you know, the Monday morning feeling when it's sort of all, ugh. I think that was something of what was going on here with Elijah. And he just hit rock bottom and said, oh, I might as well die, and runs away. And God meets with him through an angel and provides firstly for his physical needs. Did you notice that? Food, sleep, drink. God actually understands we're human and we need those things. And so he meets with him tenderly and carefully, restores him physically, so that he's then able to go on this journey to this mountain, so significant in the history of the people of Israel, the place where Moses received the Ten Commandments. And here, the experience is something similar to the kind of things that we read about in the story of the Exodus and of Moses. A powerful wind tears into the rocks. An earthquake shakes the mountain. A fire rages fierce and hot. These are the ways that God has revealed his power in the past and spoken. But God is not in any of them. And when he speaks, it's in the quietness which follows. In fact, there's something I think that we miss in the translation. I'm told by those who understand these things that the Hebrew really means the sound of sheer silence. So not the still small voice, but actually silence. And in that silence, Elijah hears, probably putting that in inverted commas for those listening on the tape, or the whatever we call it these days, hears God speak in the silence. Silence is something we do find difficult, isn't it? Probably because it removes the distractions and leaves us open to what's really going on inside us and leaves us open to God. Elijah, I think, would have found it easy to cope with the excitement of the earthquake and the wind and the fire. God was doing stuff. Hey, this is great. God's doing stuff here. But in the silence, he's again confronted by intimacy. There's no place to hide. And he's confronted by his own limitations. Actually, he's coming to the end of his ministry. But he's comforted, he's strengthened, and he gains fresh direction as he encounters God in that place as well. The famous hymn that we've just sung, Dear Lord and Father of Mankind, echoes this story. Speak through the earthquake, wind and fire, a still small voice of calm. Actually, this is the point in a way. It's actually after the earthquake, wind and fire, in the silence, that God speaks. Although the hymn writer, interestingly, was a Quaker who would have spent quite a bit of time in silence and yet also very active in the abolition of the slave trade. So combining those two things again. Anyway, moving on. I'm struck by the way that God didn't speak to Elijah through the spectacular. He spoke to him in the silence. And I've often wondered if, as Christians, we stopped chasing around after the spectacular, that we'd find God would speak to us more often and we'd hear what he has to say and what it is that we need to do in response. Sometimes I think in the church as a whole, we're very excited by what God is doing now that looks really good and sounds really good and is really energetic and enlivening. And yet we're not prepared to actually be still and know God, as the psalm calls us to do. When we look at the ministry of Jesus, it's very striking. that Jesus goes frequently and regularly on his own to be with God. He spends time in the wilderness at the beginning of his ministry, before he does anything else, really testing out his call and his understanding of who he really is. Before choosing his disciples, he spends a night alone. When he hears the news of John the Baptist's death, he takes himself apart to be on his own. After the amazing feeding of 5,000 people, again, Jesus seeks solitude. After intense pressure at the beginning of Mark's Gospel, again, we read that Jesus takes himself off alone. When the disciples return from mission, Paul referred to this earlier on, Jesus urges them to take time to rest, to be still, to recover. Luke chapter 5, we read that after healing a leper, Jesus takes himself apart. And on the mountain of transfiguration, when he's gloriously transfigured in the presence of God again, Jesus has sought time alone with his Father. And on the night he was betrayed, before he's crucified in Gethsemane, likewise, he is alone, wrestling and meeting with God. At the heart of this for Jesus was his self-understanding and a deepening relationship with the Father, so that he knew what God required of him. And solitude was a regular practice for Jesus. What does that say to us who claim to be his followers? So why is it so difficult? Why is it so difficult? It's not about personalities, you know, whether you're a quiet or a noisy person. You know, some people think, and I've already referred to that, that if you're a noisy, outgoing kind of person, well, all this quiet stuff, you know, that's not really for you. That's for other people who are into that sort of thing. We need to get over that, because this is about developing solitude of the heart and an attentiveness towards God. We may need to approach things in slightly different ways, but we all need it. But why is it difficult? Number of reasons. Firstly, that the noise outside. We live in a society of hustle and bustle, of hurry and busyness, of 24/7 media stimulation and background music, of instant messaging and twittering, and all the rest of it. You know, it's countercultural to seek stillness and silence and solitude, isn't it? You know what? So is being a disciple of Jesus. Countercultural. We need this. We need to find the time and the space to be still. But the noise outside is only part of the problem. I think a bigger problem is the noise inside us. When I ask you to be silent, there's probably 101 things you're hearing in your mind. It's less about what you're hearing with your ears, it's more about what's going on in your head. And I do know this. When I try to be still and pray, my mind goes all over the place. And I find the only thing that actually helps is to take the time it takes for me to be quiet and still. Otherwise, I just don't get there because my mind is so pulled in other directions. I think another reason we find silence difficult is that we find it embarrassing. You know the phrase, an awkward silence? It says it, doesn't it? An awkward silence. You know, here's some people in a lift, not talking to each other. They'd be embarrassed to do so, you know. Everyone's a bit awkward about the silence and relieved to get out of the lift, so they watch to see which floor is coming up and so on, the rest of it. We feel very helpless with silence. I think that's part of the problem. We rely on our words to manage and control other people. We tend to use our voices to make sure that we get things done the way that we want to do them and organize people and know how we relate. Being quiet, being silent, is actually something we find most difficult. Richard Foster, in his wonderful book, Celebration of Discipline, says the tongue is our most powerful weapon of manipulation. I'm saying this as a preacher, so, you know. A frantic stream of words flows from us because we are in a constant process of adjusting our public image. We fear so deeply what we think other people see in us that we talk in order to straighten out their understanding. And as well as embarrassment, there's also a genuine fear of silence. Some people think that actually we're not used to silence because right from when we're in the womb, there is always noise, the heartbeat of the mother as we're being formed, but also as we face the world around us. And I guess that fear is about a fear of being alone, or perhaps a fear of facing ourselves and of facing God. I said earlier that silence is something we're afraid of because it removes distractions and leaves us open to what's really going on inside us. It leaves us open to God. And that means it leaves us open to change. And that, I think, is one of the reasons we fear it. Because we know that if we stop, and if we are truly still, then we will be facing things, and we'll be facing God, that will demand change of us. So let's think a bit more deeply about this, as we ask three questions. What is the point? And two more questions. I should say, what is the point, and where do I start? Let's just be quiet again, and I'll ask you in that moment of silence, just to ask God, in that quiet moment, Lord, help me to truly be still and discover the value of giving you the time it takes to speak to me and to do your work in me. So having thought about why we find it difficult, maybe some of us are still saying, but I'm not convinced about the point of this, about silence and solitude. Well, let me just suggest four things. Firstly, that there is wisdom in silence. Secondly, that we live in a needy world. Thirdly, our own needs. And fourthly, most importantly, the desire for intimacy with God. Firstly, that there is wisdom in silence. If you look at the wisdom books of the Old Testament, you'll see a lot about this. And at the end of the wonderful book of Job, this sort of majestic, poetic reflection on why suffering and why bad things happen to good people and all the rest of it. Job says to God when he meets with God, or when God speaks to him, I'll put my hand over my mouth. His response to God is silence, because actually he realizes there is nothing worth saying. Ecclesiastes 5:2 says, do not be quick with your mouth, do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. And Proverbs 17 verse 28, this is a great one, this. Even fools are thought wise if they keep silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues. It's a good one, that, isn't it? So just, if you have a beard, just stroke it and stay quiet, and people will think you're wise, even if you haven't a clue what's going on. Craig, yours is longer than mine. You can make something of this. This is reflected in the New Testament, where James talks on the power of the tongue, which we find so hard to control. And actually, exercising the discipline of silence is one of the ways in which we can begin to tame the tongue. We'll think about that again briefly in a moment or two. Wisdom. Secondly, a needy world. Richard Foster, again, the beginning of that book I mentioned, says the desperate need today, this is given the needs of the world around us, the desperate need today is not for a greater number of intelligent people or gifted people, but for deep people. And he echoes in many ways something that was said by a man called Bernard of Clairvaux, who said, in the church of today we have many canals, few reservoirs. Meaning that there are lots of people who take in and give out, take in and give out like a canal does, but very few people who are deep, who have depth to their relationship with God, and who can give out from that depth. And he lived at the end of the 11th century, beginning of the 12th century, and he speaks about the church of today then in that way. So a needy world, but also our own needs. As long as we persist in rushing around being busy, we run the risk of setting the agenda ourselves, satisfying our own needs, particularly our own need to be needed, rather than hearing God, or listening to the voices that are loudest, whether they be outside us or inside us. We can easily wear ourselves out because of the false expectations of other people, rather than living in the calm assurance that we're doing God's will, because we've taken the time to listen and to be still and hear the Spirit's voice within. I guess we're often caught between our own insecurities on the one hand and the expectations of other people on the other. And we need silence in which to truly meet with God and discover the right perspective. And fourthly, the point of this is that God loves you. The point of this is for intimacy with God. Graham Kendrick's lovely song, which talks about God as his loving father, says, knowing you, Jesus, knowing you, there is no greater thing. But how can we know him if we don't take the time to be still with him? So finally, where do we start? I'm very conscious that in preaching about this today, I've done the very thing I've been saying don't do, which is talk a lot. But hey, I hope you can build on it. How do we develop an attitude of inner quietness? How do we cultivate that in our lives? Firstly, we need to find ways in which we can tune in to God. And much of that is actually just finding the time and the space and the things which will enable us to quieten our hearts and minds and to be still. And I guess we will find different ways of doing that, and that's fine. But it is important that we tune in, and we have to stop if we're going to do that. When I was about four, we were on holiday up in the north of England, and we went out for a walk one day. This is my dad, my two older brothers, who are much older than me, and myself and my mum. And we went for this walk in some woods, and there was a river nearby. And at one point, my mum and I were going down this path, and my brothers were somewhere with dad, as I thought. And as we went down this path, it got narrower and narrower and narrower until we ran out of path. And I could hear the water rushing down below us. And we realized that we couldn't hear anybody. And we didn't know whether to go back. We couldn't go forward. It started to rain. I started to cry. But we'd stopped. And at that point of stopping, we listened. And I heard the sound of running feet and voices. And I realized it was my two brothers. And so I shouted. Or mum shouted, I don't remember. And they helped to sort of guided us by their voices back to where it was that we needed to be in order to get back to the car and so on. I've always called it my adventure, because that's the biggest adventure I had, really. Another story which you might have heard, particularly if you've done the Alpha course, because it features in that, is of two men, one who lived in the city, the other who lived in the countryside. And the one in the countryside visited the one in the city. And as they were walking along, he said, oh, listen to that, I can hear a cricket chirping. And his friend in the city said, oh, don't be so daft. How could you possibly hear a little cricket over the noise of all this traffic and all the people rushing around? He said, oh, I can. And he stopped and listened. And then they found this little cricket chirping in the middle of the city because his ear was tuned in to the sound of that little creature. So it is that we need to find ways of tuning ourselves in to God. Simply, when you come to read the Bible, just take a bit of time to be silent, completely silent, before you read however much you're going to read of the Bible, and then be silent after it as well. Cultivate the habit of mind. Richard Foster's book, very helpful on this one. He talks about the little silences that we all have in life. I did this the other day, so I am trying to practice what I preach. Came to a set of traffic lights. What do you do when you come to a set of traffic lights and they're red? Do you tap the steering wheel impatiently? Do you flick the radio from channel to channel to see if there's something interesting on? Do you sit there revving the engine? Do you wish the traffic lights to hurry up and change so that you could get on? I see you all smiling. You all do it. Because it doesn't make a blind bit of difference, does it? They'll change when they change. Why not use that time to appreciate that you are in God's presence, to recognize his love for you, to quieten all that chatter and all that impatience inside and say, be still and know that I am God, or whatever it is that you want to say to him, or just simply listen. Take a few minutes or a couple of minutes before you finally turn in at night just to be quiet. If it's reasonable weather, poke your head outside, take a few breaths of fresh air and listen to the stillness, which even in a busy place is going to be a lot quieter than it is during the day. If you stop when you drink your morning coffee, as opposed to doing what I often do, which is, I can see Joe smirking, just sit there with it on your desk. You know, maybe just take a minute to actually hold the warmth cup in your hands and think of the warmth of God's love for you and just breathe deeply and be still. I'm not saying this is the be-all and end-all. I'm just saying these are ways in which we could begin to cultivate the habit of being still and being silent. If you do find yourself spending a lot of time watching telly, then you have got time to be still and be silent and seek God, haven't you? Resist the temptation to veg and flick. If you don't know what I mean by veg and flick, then you've obviously not got a remote control for your telly. Find somewhere, anywhere, to practice silence and solitude. And if you think, Keith, that is impossible in my life or in my house, well, take a tip from Susanna Wesley, the mother of John Wesley, who used to sit in the house where she had something like 10 or 12 children, I think, and she used to put her apron over her head. And when she had the apron over her head, you didn't bother her because she was being quiet and she was praying. So there are ways. Use fewer words. Discipline yourself. Discipline your tongue. Try spending a whole day speaking the plain and simple truth rather than trying very hard to make sure nobody possibly can misunderstand what it is that you said, because they've got to get it right in case they misunderstand you and might have a bad impression of you if you don't say absolutely the right thing, etc., etc. Try living a day only saying positive things. Think about the words or noises which punctuate your speech. The justs, reallys, nos and yeses that we frequently punctuate our speech with. Discipline the tongue as a way of beginning to learn what it is to be still and to be silent. And make sure you take time to be with God. Don't avoid him, however easy that may be sometimes. When we've got a lot going on, and when we've got a lot of stuff going on inside us that makes us feel we're not in the right place to come to God, we must come to him and be still. And try and find a way of just being silent for a minute. And then 2 minutes. And then extend that and see how it goes. Find out how to still your soul. And in that quietness and in that stillness, encounter God. You may also want to explore special times, whether that be time away on a retreat or so on. And maybe as a church we can also think about how we can take time to be silent in our meetings together, our leaders' meetings, our church meetings or whatever. I'd like us to be quiet, to be silent now. And there'll be some verses on the screen which you may find it helpful to reflect on as we do this. From Psalm 46 verse 10, be still and know that I am God. The be still there literally means stop fussing and fighting, but it certainly also means be still. Isaiah 30 verse 15, in quietness and trust is your strength. Psalm 139 verse 23, search me, O God, and know my heart. Mark 1:35. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Let's be quiet together. Get yourself sitting comfortably, firstly. Just sit so that you're straight in your chair. Probably best to uncross your legs and sit with a straight back. Maybe put your hands in your lap. Just invite you firstly to put your hands with the palms downwards. And as you do that, think about the things that are troubling you and worrying you just at the moment. And release them to God. Now put your hands facing palms upwards. And receive God's peace. you find that your mind is now turning again to other things and all sorts of thoughts rushing into your mind, then just do that thing with the hands again and just turn them over to God. And then again, sit with your palms upwards in a position of receiving His love, His grace, His peace.